Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is three-time Grammy nominee classical pianist Petronelle Milan. She'll be a special guest of the Tulsa Camerata this Thursday evening for a concert featuring the Doch Nanyi Sextet along with works by Janacek and Beethoven, Thursday evening at 7 o'clock at All Souls Unitarian Church's Emerson Hall. Milan has recorded four solo recordings on the Hansler label featuring piano transcriptions of the masters. Her Transfigured series started with Transfigured Bach. Follow-up CDs have featured the music of Mozart, Beethoven, and her latest, Transfigured Tchaikovsky. These all feature works written by these masters that were arranged for piano by other composers and pianists. The South African native maintains a busy performance schedule of solo recitals, chamber music, and as an orchestral soloist. Highlights include appearances at Carnegie Hall Recital Hall, the Salzburg Mozarteum, the Orchestra Hall in Chicago, and the Liszt Museum in Budapest. Again, she'll be playing the Doch Nanyi Sextet for clarinet, horn, strings, and piano this Thursday at All Souls Unitarian Church's Emerson Hall as a guest of Tulsa Camerata. And she joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Petronelle Milan, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This is your second appearance with Tulsa Camerata. Came here and did the Schubert Trout. And this year you're doing a piece that I guess it doesn't get performed much because it's a weird instrumentation, the Doch Nanyi Sextet, which has a clarinet,
a French horn,
and some string players.
And piano. Yes, it's interesting how few musicians actually even know this work. But once you've heard it, it actually is one of those earworm pieces. It will never leave your brain for a long time. And I love the piece. And once people actually have played it, it often is in their top five favorite chamber music works. So many people have told me that how much they love the work. It's just they're not necessarily familiar with it at first.
You know, I used to be a classical DJ years ago, and I used to love to play this piece because it is really accessible chamber music.
And at the same time, it's
so tuneful, and yet it has winds, strings, and piano, so it's kind of orchestral in many ways.
It's very symphonic, and Doch Nanyi's writing is symphonic in sort of a Brahms, a Strauss-influenced sound. I also play his work for piano and orchestra, the Variations on a Nursery Rhyme.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And there are many textural and characteristic things that repeat in this quintet. Sextet, sorry. And it sounds very symphonic. You can almost not imagine it's only six instruments. And the piano part is huge, mm-hmm. like a piano concerto on its own. But it's a lot of fun to play. And I am actually, I've been trying to think, I'm not familiar with any other work in this instrumentation. So it's a completely unique group of instruments that he put together.
Well, about the only time you hear it on a live concert is where you're maybe doing one of the Brahms trios, which involves a clarinet or horn.
Sure.
You already have them there because it is this unusual instrumentation. Of course, this is what sort of Tulsa Camerata specializes in.
Yes, they're doing great work here, and they're definitely looking at non-standard music.
Now, how did this association come together between you and the Camerata? How did this start?
You know, it's very funny. It's one of those stories for social media of our time. I was tweeting, and I tweet under Pianist Tweet, uh-huh. and Jason Hellman, who is associated with Tulsa Camerata, also tweet, and they were talking about putting this on the map and doing some concerts. And I tweeted in and I said, can I help you guys? Huh. Let's do something. I'm close. You know, I live in Dallas, so easy enough. And he said, sure. And so I came up and he tells the story rather differently from me. And he said he went to the board and he said, I met this woman on the internet. And she says she can help. And so I came up and I did a partial solo concert and we played some of the Trout, which mm-hmm. was just lovely. You know, chamber music is always so much more enjoyable when the people are nice.
Yeah, right.
Which I do have with Tulsa Camerata. And so I'm back this year to play with them again. And we start rehearsals very soon and I'm looking forward, very much forward to it.
No. Now, how much chamber music do you play?
Not enough, frankly.
I noticed from your schedule, it's mainly solo recitals.
It's solo, and then, you know, orchestral works come in, mm-hmm. but there's just never enough time, because you do need prep time and rehearsal time. with other musicians, which it's so fun for once not to practice alone. Uh-huh. You're practicing with other people and you can actually discuss things as opposed to just internalizing things when you're practicing alone.
Is that a mind shift for, I would think for a solo instrumentalist, you kind of get used to, well, it's going to be, you know, it's my interpretation in my way. And of course, when you're in your chamber music group, it's the group's way.
Yes. And playing solo piano, I think, makes you selfish uh-huh. as a musician. Because you tend to just think about yourself and what works for me. When you're playing chamber music, sometimes I have to think, well, my French horn has to breathe before that note, so I need to wait right. before I can play a downbeat. Or, I mean, I'm just using some silly example. But, it definitely teaches you to compromise. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like dating someone. You just have to be a little considerate at times.
Which is, for someone who has a big career like you and you're traveling all the time, that's something that doesn't happen that much either.
Yeah, but it's so fun to give the French horn the time to breathe, you know, or the clarinet or whatever. Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the Dordogne. Is there a particular movement that you really love in this? Because we're going to play some music here.
I love the last movement. It's almost circus music. I mean, it kind of could be circus music, I think. Mm-hmm. And he shifts the where the beat falls in the music, so it kind of distorts the audience, I think. If they're thinking they're going in four, then suddenly they're in three. And he goes through all the keys. Mm-hmm. You know, the piece is officially in C major, and of course nothing is in C major. And then at the very end, you know, he does 5-1 in C major, which is just so fabulous. So I love the fourth movement a lot.
Now, the cadence you're talking about, the rhythmic, is it still in four, or is he actually switching time signatures all
no,
the time?
No, he doesn't switch.
So it's a matter of accents.
Yeah, it's like accents. A hemiola that he does on the beat, and it just suddenly changes. But it's fantastic. And he's you know, he's writing for the keyboard. He was a pianist, so it works. So often when we play pieces like Liszt or Rachmaninoff, people will say, oh, it's very difficult. Yeah, it's difficult, but they were pianists. They knew what worked. They knew what fit the hand. Tchaikovsky, for example, was a violinist. It doesn't necessarily always fit. So you have to work a little harder to make it just gel with the hand. But when a pianist composed like Dordogne, it's easier. If that makes any sense. No matter how difficult it is, it's easier.
Right. So, it's written for the pianist's hands.
Yeah.
And it's written for the way the fingers work.
Exactly. And the layout is very comfortable. So, yeah.
Well, let's hear a little bit of the finale of the sextet. This is from an András Schiff recording from a number of years ago. It's one of the few recordings I know about of
yeah,
this
there's
piece.
Not many. There's
yeah,
not
so
many.
Here's a portion of the finale of the sextet. That's music from the Dordogne Sextet, which will be one of the featured works for the Tulsa Camerata as they present the Dordogne Sextet with my guest today, pianist Petronelle Milan. Also on the program will be Janáček's Melody for wind sextet, so you have another sextet just of winds, and a Beethoven string quintet. And Petronelle Milan, this is her second appearance with Tulsa Camerata, this great, collaboration between Tulsa musicians and this Dallas-based musician. You're actually from South Africa originally.
Yes, I grew up in South Africa, and I first moved to Michigan for 4 years. I went to Michigan State University where I did my bachelor's degree, but I was cold. I was really cold. And I had had enough coming from Africa, you know. So I moved south for, well, initially only my master's degree to University of North Texas. And ended up sticking around. I completed my DMA, and I also completed the artist certificate with emphasis in chamber music. Yeah. So chamber music is something that's always been close to my heart, if you can just find enough time to do it.
Right. And of course, you did the competitions circuit and very successful. Are you done with that now?
Yeah. Sort of when my first CD was nominated for 3 Grammys. And when you hit that, then they say, okay, don't play any more competitions. You're done.
And right, so, right. Yeah, and that was how did that come about?
I have no idea. Out of nowhere. it was really a big surprise.
Had you been playing transcriptions? Because there's this sort of this, you know, debate within among music aficionados. Okay, how important are these transcriptions? Because, you know, it's the composer's intent that this was played on the organ, for example, in Bach versus a piano. He didn't know what a piano was.
Sure.
And there's a tendency to look down at these, but these are great arrangements. And we have to remember, in the 19th century, the piano was the focus of the home.
Of course. And, you know, transcriptions is as old as the mountains.
Right.
You know, Bach took melodies from Vivaldi. And, you know, Beethoven wrote transcriptions. And Haydn so often would take the same theme from a symphony and use it in a piano sonata or something along these lines. Liszt also felt that it was part of his duty to educate smaller towns, and he made all the transcriptions of the Beethoven symphonies. So he would play Beethoven symphonies either as forehand or as solo to teach Beethoven symphonies to smaller towns where there were no orchestras. Mm-hmm. So transcriptions have always been there, and they've always been part of music life, especially for pianists. So in the middle part of the 20th century, for some reason,
this got a bad rep.
Yeah. Suddenly people just started looking down on transcriptions, even though many of the pianists of the 20th century were writing transcriptions, and they would sneak it in maybe as an encore or just as a little part of the program. So, yes, I have always played transcriptions. I remember being 8 or 9 years old, and I heard the Blue Danube done in the Schütz-Evler transcription for solo piano, and I suddenly realized that as a pianist, I can also play the orchestral works. I mean, I was a tiny kid at the time. Finally found the score at that point, realized it's too hard for me to play. You know, I barely take an octave. You know, what am I doing? But I've always kept this in my mind, so I did play a lot of transcriptions.
So how did the recording come about?
I played a piano competition in Lawton, Oklahoma, of all places on earth. And I, when I won the competition, one of the judges was a CD producer. And he said, what do you want to record? And I said, I have no...
Wow.
Just like that. And I said, I have no idea, but give me some time. And did some research, and they did some research and gave me the original, which was, well, my first CD, which was the Friedman transcriptions of Bach works with some Lopati and Bartok included.
Mm-hmm.
And so I played that. And then the CD company loved the idea of transfigured Bach. And they said, what would you like to do next? And at this point, the recording facilities and producers and such were out of Germany. So the research was left up to me. And I am a library nerd at heart. So I was at Library of Congress in D.C. I did research there. I have a big group of transcription nuts who are friends of mine by now.
Oh, I imagine now.
So I research on my own, but when I'm stuck, I can send out an email to them and said, all right, people, this is what I'm looking for. This is the theme of the next one. Can you help? And I have a very good friend in Houston, one in California and one in Germany. And those 3 guys have been just fantastic in assisting me with my research. I should actually thank them on the CDs, and, well, the CD company doesn't want personal things on the CD. So, but yes, then I did the Mozart for the Mozart here in 2006, and it was sort of a natural progression that Beethoven would follow next.
Right.
And And then I did the Tchaikovsky, which is the fourth CD that I just released a couple of months ago.
Were you surprised at the reaction? Because, you know, when somebody asks you to make a recording, it's a real careful decision. Do I go with something that's been recorded a lot? Most record companies don't want to do that because you are competing with every great pianist who ever did it.
You know, if you look at something like Chopin's Scherzi, there's, I don't know, 150 recordings of the complete Scherzi, let alone fragmented one or, you know, individuals. Mm-hmm. So you are going up with the reviews in history, going back as far as there's recordings, you know. And so it, for me to explore something different was very exciting.
And you're dealing with great composers as opposed to maybe a composer of second rank that's never been recorded. I think that's a kind of a great, brilliant idea.
And it's not only great composers, but also great transcribers. Because most of my transcribers are some of the greatest pianists of the 20th century. Alkan and, Ignaz Friedman and Joachim Raff. You know, he was actually Liszt's orchestrator. So there's all this connection, you know, in the piano world, a puzzle completes, you can complete, everyone connects somehow to someone. So dealing with these great pianists like Dino Lupati, you know, it's wonderful people that we have them on recording. We know that they were exquisite pianists and they loved some music that they transcribed and got printed. So I make sure that both my original composer and my transcriber are solid musicians in history, so to speak.
Right, right. And I noticed in the first album you stayed away from Busoni, who's probably the one transcriber that is known for being a transcriber of Bach.
I guess
that's been recorded a bunch.
It's been recorded a ton. And in this project of my transfigured recordings, I stay away from the Liszt transcriptions. Mm-hmm. They've been done.
Yeah.
I stay away from Busoni and also Rachmaninoff.
Yeah, who also
just
did a lot of
These are lesser known transcriptions. A lot of these things are, I get a microfilm out of a library. That's where I get the score. It's the only place it's available. So, these things are not necessarily known. And, you know, I fuel maybe, I don't know, 2 emails a week from people saying, can I please have the score? And I gladly send them out. I have them all on PDF by now. But people cannot find these scores. And so I sort of consider it also part of my duty to share these scores so that music, the music could become more mainstream.
Now I'm going to go back to Busoni again, but
yes.
Those are very pretty well known, and I'm sure you've seen them. Can you talk about differences between, say, Ignaz Friedman transcribing a toccata and fugue and Busoni?
Busoni doing
it? Yeah. Is there much difference?
No, in that specific example, not so much, because they were both amazing pianists. They both wrote...
Bach was an amazing keyboardist in the first place.
True. They both wrote for the piano in a very comfortable way. I play a lot of Busoni. I play some of his sonatinas. He did the famous Carmen transcription as his sixth sonatina. Very comfortable piece. But then I would, if I could do a comparison of Carmen and say the Busoni Carmen is a little more simplistic in a way, more straight up of the melodies from the Bizet opera. And if you compare that with the Horowitz Carmen transcription, which I also play, which is just chaos all over the place. And he essentially just takes maybe the motifs, the main themes, and he does what Horowitz does best,
right?
All kinds of crazy around it. So that is probably a more elaborate example versus a more standard example of a transcription.
Now, I've never heard the Horowitz Carmen, but I've of course heard the Stars and Stripes, which always just cracks me up because the notes are the same, but it's utterly different.
Right, it's the same with Carmen. And there's 4 or 5 different Horowitz Carmen versions.
Uh-huh.
And the ones that are written down are never the ones that you hear on the recording because, you know, he made it up as he went along, which is part of the fabulousness of Horowitz, which I love.
Now, your latest recording is Transfigured Tchaikovsky.
Now,
when we think about Tchaikovsky, we think of the piano concertos, but we don't think of his solo piano music. He did write some.
Right, he did Seasons.
Yeah, right. These are, it looks like they're mostly songs.
They're
right?
all Lieder,
yeah.
And we so easily think Tchaikovsky is just the happy composer who wrote Nutcracker.
Yeah.
You know, but it was a sad life, I think, in total. And we do have the rumor that at the end he was given the choice of the firing squad or drinking the cholera-infected water when it was discovered that he was homosexual. Whether it's really true that he drank the water and committed suicide in that way to save the family name, I don't think we'll ever have a definitive answer on this, but it's pretty well documented that it might have been what happened. But he had a very, very dark, sad side to him.
Oh, I think of the Pathetic Symphony,
Right, absolutely. Yeah. And also these leader and the poems are, well, if you just think of Tolstoy poetry, it's very morbid. You know, I always think they say, it's still snowing, the flowers are dying, you left me again, my heart is broken, you know. and that's essentially what most of the Lieder are about. I did exact translations of the Russian when I was working on the transcriptions.
So you know the feeling behind the poem.
Yes, very much so. Instead of just reading a translation of the poem, I made sure to know exactly the meaning of the word underneath the harmonies, that kind of thing, as singers would do in their preparation of a piece. And the Tchaikovsky pieces were transcribed by a pianist, Isaac Makhnovsky, who actually was he fled Russia. He was Jewish. He needed to get out. Stalin had it in for him. But he was an amazing pianist. I made contact with his son, who actually lives in the Washington, D.C. area. And he sent me a bunch of recordings of his father's playing. And it is exquisite pianism. Again, we're back with a pianist who made the transcriptions. So it works, you know. And he was very good friends with Richter in Gelels, for example. And, well, he managed to make it to the U.S., and this is the first time someone actually takes the complete transcriptions and record them.
Now, was he able to make a career in music in the United States, or did he have to do something else like a lot of immigrants do? You know,
He played a little. He taught a little.
But not.
But, yeah. And his son is a doctor, so clearly his father said to him, don't go the musician route.
Well, let's hear a little bit of a transfigured Tchaikovsky from our guest today's latest recording. My guest is Petronelle Milan, a three-time Grammy nominee known for her series of transfigured recordings, which include recordings of transcriptions of Bach, Mozart, Beethoven, and now the latest Tchaikovsky. What's a great track to hear, do you think?
Maybe the very first one on the CD. It's a personal favorite of mine.
Okay.
At the Din of the Bull.
All right. And why is it a favorite?
I think maybe because it's slightly better known. So I came from a different place when I was preparing it. I had heard it so many times. But there's something about the sadness of this one for me that transcends all sadness.
As we laugh about it, let's hear a little bit of music by Tchaikovsky, played by my guest today, Petronelle Milan. That's music performed by my guest today, Petronelle Milan, from her latest recording, Transfigured Tchaikovsky, which comes to us from the Hansler label. And that's all, in fact, all four recordings have come from Hansler. She'll be the guest soloist with the Tulsa Camerata this Thursday, playing the Duchnanyi Sextet with the Camerata, also on the program, works by Janáček and Beethoven. Now, I have to ask you, you are, like a lot of great pianists, you have an endorsement deal, but it's with a piano company I have never heard of. Now, I've heard of there, of course, there are Steinway artists. You'll hear a Baldwin artist. You occasionally even hear of Bösendorfer artists, but I've never heard of Blüthner. Tell me about Blüthner pianos. Are they great instruments?
I love them.
Are they handmade or something?
They are. You know, the morning before I recorded my first CD, I walked into Skywalker Ranch, which is George Lucas's recording studios in up in Marin County, and there were two pianos. It was a Blüthner and a Yamaha. And they said to me, choose a piano, and I had maybe 20 minutes. And which really is not an ideal way to go record a CD, but nevertheless. So I played.
It was your first CD. Who's going to complain?
Well, yeah. So I played some notes on the Yamaha and I played on the Blüthner. And for some reason, this Blüthner just really spoke to me. I really loved it. And so I opted to record the CD on the Blüthner, not thinking twice about it, just simply I loved the piano and it was an exquisitely responsive instrument. When the CD was nominated for the Grammys, the Blüthner family, when they're based in Leipzig in Germany, sent me, you know, a coffee table book and some invited me over for some concerts. So I played several concerts in that area of Germany. And they also put me in their Hall of Fame alongside other pianists like Mikhail Pletnev and Rubinstein is there. And many, many of the composers is up on this wall. And so I ended up buying a Blüthner, which was not a requirement to be a Blüthner artist, which unlike Steinway artists, you have to buy a Steinway.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, but they didn't require that I bought one, but I ended up buying one just because I really loved that specific piano and I have it in my house. And yeah, I really, truly love it. Because Blüthner is made in Leipzig, which used to be Eastern Germany, it was hard for them to get mainstream publicity out. But they're very meticulously put together. And they also have a very unique patent called the aliquot system, which is in the upper register of the piano. Instead of three strings hitting the hammer, there's a fourth string that is raised. So it just picks up the overtones.
Interesting.
So the three strings is hit and the fourth one is raised slightly. So the piano tuner actually uses his fingernail to sort of pluck the string to be able to tune it. Uh-huh. It takes a little longer to tune a Blüthner with aliquot, but it changes the sound of the instrument, which, as you know, for a pianist, like we're fighting for sound the whole time. So,
and one of the issues on, especially on the low end, the extreme low end, the extreme high end, is that the tendency a lot of times is pianos that don't really speak well, they kind of just go plink,
yes,
plink, plink. And yeah. I assume that that overtone actually gives a ring to it a little better.
It definitely has a ring to it. And a Blüthner, a full size, is about 280 centimeters with 9 feet and mm-hmm. and a little bit extra. And playing those big ones it's such a treat. And so for my last CD, when I actually flew to Germany to go record, I walked into the Blüthner factory and there were 4 full-size pianos for me to choose from.
Oh, wow. Isn't that a great thing?
It was fantastic. You know, and I thought back to about my first CD when they were like, you have 20 minutes, pick a piano. You know? And now I get 4 pianos. I have 2 days. I can choose. And all 4 of them were exquisite.
Well, you hear stories of like you know, the all-time greats at piano who, you know, they close Steinway and says, okay, pick your piano, you know.
Right.
And you had that great opportunity for the recording.
Yeah,
that's great. Well, we wish you continued success. Is there a new recording in the wings at this point?
I am in the process of researching, and I think I've got it down to 2 composers. So check back with me in a little bit, and I'll let you know.
All right. In the meantime, I hope a lot of people come out to hear you play the Dohnányi Sextet Thursday night at All Souls, Petronel Milan. A pleasure to talk with you. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
Petronel Milan speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. She'll be featured in the Tulsa Camerata's latest concert this Thursday evening at 7 at All Souls Unitarian Church, Emerson Call, playing the Dohnányi Sextet. Information on the concert available at tulsacamerata.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. We'll leave you with a little more music by Petronel. And this is Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.